All right, T-minus 8 hours until round one of the NHL draft on Sportsnet. It's the Friday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne with you on Twitter, at the Golden Muzzy, at JT Bourne. Many thanks to producer Matt Marchese, as well as technical ops Dylan Brown and Lance Kennedy for their hard work behind the scenes. Lots happening in the NHL world. The stage certainly set for a busy couple of weeks. ESPN's Emily Kaplan will drop by in about 30 from now. We'll break down the NHL draft, the trade market, free agency, and also the 2021-22 NHL schedule unveiled on Thursday. And I was waiting to find out when Jared McCann would be returning to Toronto, Borny. It's March 8th, if you're wondering.
I was desperately wondering. I know that's plenty of time for them to prepare the video and all that. All those Jared McCann jokes. See you later. It's like he never happened. He passed through town like a rumor. See you later.
Really, really quickly, my man. But obviously an exciting time to be a hockey fan. It's sort of fascinating to me because I feel like this week has been like 14 days long. And maybe it was the Seattle expansion, the protection process as well. But it seems like really, really quiet in the NHL for some reason right now, doesn't it?
Well, it does. You know, there's some stuff on Twitter of just like, I got to imagine being an insider is hard work because you're at least difficult to like put out because you have drips and drabs information. You don't want to upset the apple cart, but, you know, it was reported that Eichel is skating today. You know, he's looking good. He's healthy. He's available if anyone wants him. The guy's in a good mental place, it seems like. So that's interesting news. You know, Elliot leading into this show here, we just heard the clip talking about Freddie Anderson, possibly a fit with Arizona. But there's so many players that feel like they have to move. Everyone says you wait for the draft. Well, here we are.
No, that's a good point. That's a really good point because we're always like, yeah, there's going to be fireworks at the draft. There's going to be fireworks. And I understand it's virtual once again this season, but you're right. There's some big-time names out there. Certainly, again, we're hearing Seth Jones linked to Chicago. Of course, his brother Caleb went there a couple weeks back in the Duncan Keith deal, so we'll see if that happens. And Elliot Friedman, of course, has been all over that situation. And Jack Eichel, I mean, we should start there because that is the biggest name on the trade market right now. What do you make of the market right now? Obviously, we've heard names like the New York Rangers, the Minnesota Wild. I just don't know. I think patience has to be the most important aspect of this whole thing from Buffalo right now, Borny.
It does. You know, I really do not want to see the Buffalo Sabres get too patient here, though, Nick, and miss out the opportunity to move him. And all of a sudden, his no movement clause kicks in, I think, in a year. Is it after the season? He'll have it. A no trade kick in, at which point you become like it becomes the Taylor Hall situation where the player has all the leverage. So, you know, we're at the point where if they're going to move him and it feels like they have to, it's like, what is the best deal out there? I think they got to put their cards on the table with all these GMs and say, we're moving him today. Everyone is in the mix here. Everyone's got a shot at him. What do you have? What's our best available offer? I don't think it makes sense to care about where he goes, if he's in the division or otherwise. You're so bad right now if you're the Sabres. You got to get better. You need good players. Don't care where you send them.
At this moment, you would think they have a firm understanding of what each team is offering. You would hope, and hope's the key word, certainly, because Buffalo has handled things a bit differently over the last several years, if you know what I'm saying. But certainly, I think you look at a player of the ilk of Jack Eichel, I think teams, quite honestly, in normal times would be lining up. But again, important to note the injury he's coming off and how much money he makes, certainly in this flat cap era. But I think you have to think teams are going to start to step up. Like, if you're Buffalo, you have to have sort of an internal deadline along what you're saying to say, hey, we got to trade this guy by now. If we're dead certain on making this deal, you would think by July 28th or a bit past that, that's probably the target date where you got to make this move because then the money really dries up, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. A lot of teams will have a much, you know, they want to have an idea what they have come free agency. They want to have an idea of their salary situation. So, yeah, we're kind of in that window where something has to happen with Eichel. I don't know what your sense is. It feels to me like the New York Rangers are the most likely suitor, you know, given their arc, you know, when they expect to be good, which could become very soon with a move like this. Do you feel like it's somewhere else or is Rangers, am I right there?
No, 1,000%. I think you look around this league right now, I think you read it in what Buffalo has been saying out there to the media, and it's like, hey, New York Rangers, we want to make a deal with you. Step up. And we know the two sides conversed last offseason, of course. And I just think you look, Borny, at what Buffalo is searching for right now. I think the Rangers probably have that and then some. I mean, if you want to throw Ryan Strome's name into the conversation, Alexi Lafreniere, Kaapo Kakko, like there's a bevy of names that would, I think, entice the Buffalo Sabres to make this type of deal. And ultimately, it'll come down to, hey, do we want to trade this guy in our conference? But I don't think you can look at that anymore. I think you just have to make the best move possible. And to me, on paper, and we have no clue what the Rangers could be offering, the Rangers make a lot of sense. You're right.
Well, and two things come to mind. One is that, you know, this is kind of Chris Drury's team now, right? And you don't want to you don't want to go out there and get burned on your first deal. But I just can't help but look at the NBA, who values stars so much, and some of the you know GMs are willing to move heaven and earth to make those acquisitions happen. And Eichel to me is worthy of that. I think the Rangers are in a position where they have a lot of assets, and if they move off some, you know, some of those pieces you just mentioned to get an Eichel, I think it's worthwhile, man. The guy like Eichel has the prime of his career ahead. I mean, man, that's a great player to add to your mix.
Yeah, and I think it would signify to the rest of the league, hey, we're serious. They got an outstanding goalie in Igor Shesterkin. He came back from the injury this past season. I thought he was tremendous. Obviously, they had Zibanejad with a tough year, or Timmy Panarin's going to be in the heart conversation every year. It's go time for the New York Rangers. The Barclay Goodrow pickup yesterday, a six-year contract, a nice little depth piece. He was crucial in back-to-back cups and a depth role for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I think you're so right, and that, quite honestly, not only would it put the Rangers into the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I think it puts them into being a serious contender. And again, I know this happened a while back, but I just really like the Gerard Gallant fit there too.
Yeah, I do too. No, as an Islanders guy, it kills me to admit it, but there's a lot of good things happening with the Rangers organization. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the young talent, the direction, and the potential upside there. So, yeah, now it's one of those things in Toronto, we've recognized the DeMar DeRozan moment as, like, you know, sort of the turning point when they get Kawhi Leonard to put them over the top. You know, is Jack Eichel that for the Rangers, where they're close, they've got a lot of good parts, and they just need that one superstar? He would fit that mold, I would imagine.
So you reference the Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas, the GM, doing his rounds yesterday. What did you make? Certainly, I think when you look at what was said yesterday, doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down, he's going down with this ship, right? And obviously, you got to believe in what you put forth here. But what did you make of the remarks yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I've come to believe that Kyle Dubas likes and trusts what they have built here a lot more than other people. You know, one thing that Stewie and I tend to disagree on the show, he's not here, so I can cash in right now.
He's probably listening.
You know, it's true. But, you know, he's mentioned, you know, they need to make a change because it didn't work. And to me, it feels like change for change's sake. And I don't feel like that's what Kyle Dubas wants to do, is just, well, this hasn't worked, we have to do something different. I think he looks at a team that got unlucky with the Tavares injury, was, you know, likely without that, they get by Montreal, given how close a couple of the games were, with the chance to put the Canadiens away. And then you see what the Canadiens do. I think he looks at his group and goes, we're right there. We had an unlucky, you know, run there in the first round. And yeah, I know I can hear all the Leafs fans out there saying year after year the same thing has happened. But I just think Dubas believes that they got unlucky this year, and that, you know, given another chance at it, they can be like the Capitals or the Blues and get over the hump with the same group.
It really feels like that last dance, that final dance type moment for the way this roster is currently constructed. Now, I didn't take those remarks to suggest that they're not going to make some substantial changes. Like, I think they'll make a trade or some type of pickup via free agency that is unexpected. And I think you have to tweak with your roster sometimes. I think it's fair. You know, we always like to bring this up. Only one team wins the Stanley Cup, so ultimately the rest of the league goes home unhappy to a degree. And I think that's a perfect correlation to the Maple Leafs' perspective. You look at teams that have won recently, the Washington Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning, kept going back to the well with the same nucleus in place. So I understand it from that point of view. I just feel like people are going overboard on the whole Hyman conversation. They're going overboard on, oh, we need to make big-time changes, and we being sort of the team and the fan base. You know, I think staying the course pretty much, I think, is going to serve them correctly, because you just don't want to be caught making a bad decision this offseason. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a different thing when you have a bad year and you say we can't go back with that same team. But, like, that was a successful regular season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think you're looking for a team that's good and looking to get great. How do you take that next step to great? You know, I don't know that it's blowing up the goodness you've built. It's adding to the goodness, and I think that's what they want to do. There are scenarios out there where you make a big trade and this team improves. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sitting here saying that, you know, the way Dubas is doing this is the right way. I'm saying I think that that's his plan, though, and the way he sees it, that this isn't a team as far off as the frustrated fans maybe think it is.
Again, it's Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne here on the Friday edition of Hockey Central. Don't forget round one of the NHL draft tonight virtually again on Sportsnet at 8 Eastern Time, 2 to 7. Rounds 2 to 7 coming up tomorrow starting at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. By the way, confirmation, Bourne, via Twitter, Anthony Stewart is listening.
Oh, good. I was worried he wouldn't be. Pick up the phone, Stewie. Join in then.
How about co-host the show? He sent us a nice gift, though. Thanks for listening, Stewie. Let's get to Alex Nedeljkovic, and obviously a big-time addition for the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, there were some rumors out there the last little while that Nedeljkovic could be moved if they didn't figure something out contractually, and they make the move. A bit of a stunner. I can't remember the last time where a Calder finalist was subsequently dealt. I believe somebody tweeted at me and said it was Andrew Raycroft, and that could be the case. But it's been a while, is what we're trying to say when it comes to Calder finalist netminders. That's a coy pickup. I don't care. And I get it from the Carolina perspective as well, Justin. He's played 38 games in the NHL. He's 25. You know, before the last 30 games, I would say nobody really knew who he was, or at least had forgotten about him, you know, from his earlier days, you know, obviously in the OHL and being drafted in the second round. And so the perspective is different for both sides, but a pretty good gamble, I would say, by Steve Yzerman here.
I mean, it's a wonderful gamble by Steve Yzerman. I love that pickup. I think if you're Carolina, you're looking at Nedeljkovic and saying, what is he really? You know, like, do you think mm-hmm. that because he had 23 games as a .923 save percentage NHL goaltender, he is a .923 save percentage NHL goaltender going forward? Or do you think that all of his previous history matters as much or more, which is, you know, some pretty middling seasons in the American League and some struggles early on? You know, it's probably somewhere in the middle. I think what happened here is he played so well, he put himself into the realm of an arbitration reward where you're looking at $3.5-4 million. And for $3.5-4 million, look around the NHL this season at what's available. Like, mm-hmm. is Darcy Kemper going to make much more than that? Is Freddie Anderson going to make much more than that? You can get a guy who's a lot less of a question mark for the money you're going to have to spend on Nedeljkovic.
I just think when you look at this goalie and you look at this team, how long have we been talking about Carolina, who is searching for their next guy in between the pipes, and it seems like they found him out of nowhere. Lucky enough, I guess, to say, and it's sad to say, but the Mrazek injury sort of paved the path for Nedeljkovic to come up this season, and the rest was history, a la sort of Jordan Binnington. And the projection was always there when Nedeljkovic was drafted, played for Team USA. You wondered, could he be a star goalie in this league? And it's too early to tell on that front. But again, from the Detroit perspective, that deal just made way too much sense. Just a third-round pick and the negotiating rights for Jonathan Bernier, a UFA to be. But Elliot Friedman last night saying that the Canes are talking to Bernier when it comes to that. But Detroit ends up signing Nedeljkovic to a two-year contract, $3 million per. You just can't go wrong with that, a rebuilding team. But I think ultimately we'll find out if it was the system or was it Nedeljkovic in Carolina, right?
But it's a really good contract from Detroit's perspective because you're not committing beyond a couple seasons. Like, if he's mm-hmm. not the guy you hope he is, you get a couple of years to find out. And listen, if you've got a star that you acquired for basically a third rounder, then great, then you'll pay him. I think they would be very fine with that working out. So I love that contract. And it's actually fairly comparable to what just happened with Chris Drieger, who, mm-hmm. you know, I think Nedeljkovic has 23, I think we said, NHL games. Drieger's only got 38 in the NHL or something like that, and also had very good numbers, but small sample size. So Drieger gets 3 years times $3.5 million. You know, not that different from what Nedeljkovic got. So a nice reward for both those guys.
You know, it's fascinating to me that people on Twitter just love piling up on the Carolina Hurricanes. And more times than not, I would concur and agree. I respect the fact, and I know it's a weird or different way to do business, but they sort of have a ceiling or a cap on everything and they won't go past it. And to some degree, I sort of respect that, Borny. How do you feel about it?
Well, I do respect it, but not when your team's struggling. Like, the Carolina have felt short a goalie to me for years and years. And I'm sure we can go back through their past five seasons and they've had some good Mrazek stretches or whatever it's been. But, they've had great teams where, you know, having a legitimate number one guy who you don't have to worry about, who can give you a 9-16 or something, sure would go miles with an offensive firepower team like them that has a great decor. Like, I like Carolina. I just think they need a permanent solution and goal here this summer. And I expect them to do something there still.
Yeah, I just wonder, too, from the Freddie Anderson perspective, I know for a fact that Carolina has been interested multiple times in Freddie Anderson in, say, the last couple years, and I wonder if he does get to market, if they circle back on that. But again, as Elliot mentioned last night, they're talking to Bernier. Obviously, Bernier would be the backup goalie, but I'm right there with you. Like, this suggests to me that Carolina is looking at something substantial, whether it be in free agency or, say, the trade market. There's a guy in Anaheim who's pretty good, too, no?
Yeah, that's a good point. Not too shabby there in John Gibson. So, there's a lot of options this year. Feels like more, Linus Allmark's name has been mentioned. It feels like a long list of goaltenders could still be shuffled. So I don't think Carolina's done.
Yeah, I'm with you on that front. And again, if you're Carolina, like, you have to have a substantial upgrade. I don't know if Mrazek's going to be that guy. Clearly, you've tried that the last couple of years. It hasn't worked out. Meantime, let's pivot the conversation to what in the world is Arizona doing? Because we thought this team was trying to shed cap, but they just keep adding and adding. And again, I must preface by saying it's early on here in the offseason. Maybe their long-term goal for this offseason I will be more defined, I would say, maybe in a month from now. But they pick up Shane Gostisbehere. Pretty much, it is a cap done for Philadelphia, and they acquired two more draft picks. So is it too early to assess what in the world Arizona is doing right now? They picked up Andrew Ladd last week, too.
Well, I don't think it is. I think we can see a pattern where they recognize that they are a team that free agents aren't drawn to. You know, they're not a super stable organization. They haven't been in the past. The fan base is not wild. So they struggled to draw players there. So I think they recognize they have to build internally. And what that means is draft picks. And that's what they've done here. They have an owner now that's willing to spend on Andrew Ladd and Shane Gostisbehere and take picks on with that. They've made a good number of acquisitions in that regard, and I think that's how they're going to have to develop good. It looks like they're taking a long-term play to developing the team instead of trying to be good tomorrow, and I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, there's going to be a long next couple of years in Arizona because, again, Connor Garland's name is out there. For as long as his name's been out there dating back to the trade deadline, you would have to think he's getting dealt in the next week, and somebody's going to pick up an excellent player who's 25. He's an RFA. It's no secret. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the captain, is available. I think a very underrated defenseman in this league who I think one day already could be a Norris candidate is Jacob Chychrun. And he's a big reason why Oliver Ekman-Larsson is available. And obviously the contract plays a factor too. But I like Chychrun quite a bit. So Gostisbehere goes in there as well. Darcy Kemper is available too. That's just, what raised my eyebrows is this team is clearly trying to shed, and now they've added two guys, and I understand why they did it to add the draft picks. And of course they don't have their first rounder, of course, because of the John Chyka situation. But from that perspective, it's intriguing, but certainly I think Arizona is expected to be a big time player in terms of trading assets this week.
Yeah, I think they're going to pile up those draft picks. By the way, OEL, Chychrun, and Gostisbehere, that's a pretty dynamic decor to start things off. So, I really like the way that they're attacking this. They had to go in a different direction they are. I also saw that they're looking at a new arena site in Tempe. Mm-hmm. I lived in Chandler, Tempe when I was there,
nice.
With Chandler. But, man, it is a awesome spot. If they could put a rink there, I think their fan base would love it and would thrive. They're just not in Phoenix right now.
Exactly. And that's a tough go right now. And certainly a team that it's pretty surreal that like 2-3 years ago, they were on the upswing. They make the Kessel deal. You're like, wow, Arizona's pretty legit. Like, watch out for them in the Stanley Cup playoffs, at least in the first round to make some noise. And well, now they're headed back the other direction. And my wonder, truthfully, is can this organization handle sort of a retooling or a rebuilding, Borny?
Well, it's a good question. I think you have to have an owner that has some money and is willing to steal himself for a tough go here for a little bit. as you mentioned, they look like they were turning it around, but they need to recognize where they are in terms of actually winning the Cup. They weren't anywhere close and heading that direction. So I'm a big fan. If I'm them, though, I'm watching Seattle and Vegas and, you know, their expansion teams and the way they were built and just going, come on. Like, that cannot be fair. You know, I'm sure they wish they could have started over when they moved there from Winnipeg. But just jealousy, I guess. Seattle looks pretty good out of the gate.
Imagine you had that option of starting over. Arizona would feel really, really good about life. Again, it's Nick Elberga and Justin Bourne on the Friday edition of Hockey Central. Again, Emily Kaplan of ESPN coming up in about 10 minutes from now. Round one of the NHL draft tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet. Tony DeAngelo, you want to talk about value buys. So Anthony DeAngelo of the New York Rangers placed on waivers today for the purpose of a buyout. We all saw this coming. Last played in the NHL on January 31st, got in an altercation with Alexander Georgiev, but this is multiple situations in that Rangers locker room. It couldn't be rectified. And this, by the way, was a guy who was coming off an unbelievable season where he had 15 goals, 53 points in 68 games. Obviously, there's a lot behind the curtain, but you want to talk about value buys. There's none bigger than, I think, Anthony DeAngelo this offseason.
What's crazy, though, is you just can't be the team to make the value buy. Like,
you're
right. Can't do it. Everywhere he's been, he gets run out of town.
He's teammates
don't. Well, that's, you know, we don't say that about many players publicly. People say it, but it's true. At this point, I think we can assess that from how it's gone in multiple places that he's played, that he is that inside these locker rooms. So, you know, I can't imagine there's going to be a team that would do it. You know, as desperate as they may be for talent, as much as they are going to make the claim that they can fix the guy or whatever. So it's an interesting case study. Can you be a big enough jerk to play yourself out of the NHL, to act yourself out of the NHL? You know, for as good as he is a very, very good NHL defenseman. You know, I am going purely on hearsay and what has happened to him in multiple places throughout his career, but it feels like this is a test. Maybe he's just too big a jerk to play for an NHL team. That would be fascinating.
I love the strong opinion, and I think you're extremely right. And this dates back to his days in the Ontario Hockey League. This is not a sort of new reputation that's been bestowed upon him. Like, this is a thing dating back 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I just have the feeling there's a team who's willing to do it. You know, Montreal's name's been linked to him since the altercation with Georgiev. I just think there is somebody out there. There always seems to be somebody out there right. Who feels like they can change somebody. And I think it's so tough. Like, I think as a GM, maybe you have to disconnect the player and the person and what they can give you on the ice. And you look at the potential of him running your power play, I think you get a bit excited. But there's obviously going to be a lot of background work done before anything comes together. But I think ultimately there's going to be a team who does it. Having said that, this has to be his final shot because this is three teams now and he's 25 years of age.
Well, I'm reminded of Antonio Brown in the NFL who, you know, maybe part of his is mental health. I'm not entirely sure. But there's a guy who... Boy, he did everything he could to you know, act himself out of the league, but he was so good that teams kept saying, maybe we can fix him here.
Exactly.
You know, like that. It's almost impossible to be a talented player and not have teams take a swing on you and try to fix you. So maybe he'll get a shot somewhere. Maybe he'll grow up, right? That happens too. I look back at the person I was in my early 20s and don't love everything about him. So, you know, maybe the guy grows up. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there that it's not too late for him. But the past hasn't been pretty.
Hey, that's a really good point. You know, ultimately when you brought that up, you know who I thought of? Alex Radulov. You remember Alex Radulov back in the day with Nashville? Like, everybody's like, this guy likes to hit the club. He likes to party. He seems like the classiest guy and a guy who just cares so much about his job and his teammates love him, his coaches love him, his organization loves him. So I think you're right. I think from that perspective, I do think we have to give people sometimes the benefit of the doubt. And certainly when you look at DeAngelo, he is still 25. But again, that reputation, I should say, precedes him. And certainly, I think there's going to be a team out there who says, you know what, let's try to change this guy because we know what he can do on the ice. But that was just another chapter of what was a crazy year on Broadway, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You know, there's no shortage of drama there. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the next few days because, like I said, they're well poised to be good. I think, you know, Lafreniere and Capocracco are about to take some strides here for that team. So they're always high drama and a lot of fun.
Tons of depth with the New York Rangers, no doubt about that. So we'll hit the break. Other side, again, the NHL draft coming up tonight. ESPN's Emily Kaplan is actually down in Columbus covering the Blue Jackets' perspective. But, again, she's locked in league-wide, everything from Seattle to the draft to the off-season trade activity. We've got it all covered coming up next with ESPN's Emily Kaplan here. It's Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, back here on the Friday edition of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne with you at the Golden Muzzy, at JT Bourne on Twitter. Of course, round one of the NHL draft goes tonight virtually, 8 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet here in Canada. ESPN south of the borders. We're happy to bring in now the one and only from ESPN. It is Emily Kaplan. How's it going, Emily?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday, guys.
You as well. I know you're down in Columbus getting set to cover the Blue Jackets, perspective of the draft. Do we expect some substantial activity of the Jackets this weekend?
I think so. I think something's got to come to a head this weekend for them. We know that Seth Jones doesn't want to resign after this season. And we also know that typically when you get the best return for a player, when these big deals go down, is draft weekend. And considering they have three first-round picks, which is a lot of capital. That's something that a lot of teams would love, even in this uncertain draft year. I just get the sense that something's going to go down tonight.
Do you think it'll be something with the one and only Jack Eichel? I know you know that question was coming. We had to ask. You're more in touch than we are. What do you expect to happen with Mr. Eichel?
Yeah, same situation as Seth Jones. We're like, we know it's not an untenable situation between Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres, but like, he's not coming back there. We know that a divorce is inevitable, and I know there are some teams are pretty pleased to see that he is skating again. There are certain teams that I just have my eye on, like this has to go down for them. And the Minnesota Wild are a team that I'm just really focusing on in general this weekend. They are someone who I've always needed center depth. They really could just use a number one center. Bill Guerin has showed us in this offseason he's not afraid to do something bold. Those two buyouts that he did really foreshadowed something bigger ahead. So I'm not saying Jack Eichel to Minnesota Wild trade is absolutely going to happen, but it seems likely. But I've also heard that there's a lot of other teams sneakily on the radar just checking in that could swoop in at the last minute.
Yeah, I like that because the theater is certainly set. We always like to bring up, as Justin brought up earlier on, the NHL draft. Wait for the draft. Wait for the draft. Well, the draft is here. And certainly one name you brought up who is with Columbus is Seth Jones. And certainly Elliot Friedman suggesting that maybe Chicago is stepping its efforts again. It's no secret. They're trying to make this happen. Brother Caleb's now there. You know, what would it take, do you think, from Chicago's perspective? And what do you feel like Columbus is looking for in this type of transaction?
Well, like the Minnesota Wild, the Columbus Blue Jackets are a team that I feel like just always can use centers, can use that number one guy. And so I know that they do have their eyes on Kirby Doc. That said, Chicago loves Kirby Doc, and that's one of the best young players that they have, and I don't think they want to part with him. Another player that Chicago loves that I think Columbus would love too is Alex DeBrincat. So I think what Chicago is doing is figuring out, can we do a deal without giving up one of these two players? And if we had to give up one of these two players, like, what would that mean for us? How could we be able to restock our cabinet? Because the truth is, Chicago really hasn't drafted that well lately. They've, you know, kind of missed on a few draft picks here and there. So I'm curious to see if it goes down. But living in Chicago, knowing a lot of people in that Blackhawks organization, I do know that it's something that they're seriously considering, and they would love to bring him there. And I think they would have loved to bring him there even if Caleb Jones, his brother, wasn't there either.
Emily, I've heard a lot of people talk about the value of a draft pick this year, and I'm kind of the belief that later round picks would be more valuable because it seems like no one has a clue. You know, people didn't play last year. A lot of junior hockey players did not have their normal season, but that the top picks may be less valuable. Do you have any sense of what the value of a draft pick is this year in contrast with previous years?
Oh, it's so tough to say. All I know about this year is that everyone's boards are just wildly different. It's going to be a guy that gets picked in like the first or second round, and teams are going to be like, I actually had him in the fourth or fifth round. And so I think almost the second and third round picks are super valuable because that's where you can take your chances on guys that, you know, maybe other teams wouldn't have on their roster or just wouldn't have on their boards whatsoever. But, you know, I also think that teams can just swing for the fences a little bit when you get to those later rounds and maybe get a guy that in, you know, previous years you would be a little hesitant on, but this year you can just kind of justify it. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. And I honestly, what I'm most expecting this year is surprises. Like, I really feel like we're going to get some names in the first round that we just weren't prepared for.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Certainly nobody's really played much the last little while, the last year or so, with ESPN's Emily Kaplan, Nick Alberga, and Justin Bourne here on Hockey Central. So the Seattle Kraken, of course, announced their inaugural roster the other day. They're another team I'm curious to see what they do over the next week leading into free agency. They've got the cap space as well. But what have you made of the first couple days with them having an actual roster to talk about?
So I think it's very apparent that they value defense, that is the strength of their team, is their blue line. And so much so that, like, Vince Dunn doesn't even have a spot in that top four right now, and that might be a player they try to flip. I honestly feel like Ron Francis looked at all the players available and was like, yeah, I see you want to give me Matthew Shane's contract. You want to give me Vladimir Tarasenko's contract. But, like, I'm not taking on your problems. I don't want that. I'll get on my own bad contract. And so I do expect them to be active in free agency given this cap space. You know, they've had so much time to prepare, but so have other teams. And I think that did hamstring them at this expansion draft because you didn't see them make any of these side deals to yield additional picks. They want to build the right way, but at the same time, if I'm them, I'm like, look at the Pacific Division. Really only the Vegas Golden Knights are the team that's a lock to make the playoffs in that division. Why don't you just go for it?
What are your thoughts on what the Toronto Maple Leafs might do? We have to ask our local Canadian questions. You know, this is the team. I guess the big questions are, like, is there a chance they make a big move? Could it be the Mitch Marner's time? Or is this just going to be they're going to make their couple of picks and walk away, do you think?
Oh, great question. And I don't know if you really want the American perspective on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's their bad. Why are we talking about them?
To be fair, you know, I do think that Kyle Dubas did some soul searching this summer, though. And, you know, he had such conviction on what was needed for this team to get over the playoff hump, and it didn't work out. And, you know, I want him to trust his process, and I believe he is trusting his process. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are some roster shakeups. And we'll see what happens with them in free agency as well, because they are losing Zach Hyman. You know, they do have a little bit of flexibility to make some moves, so we'll see where they go.
So full disclosure, I put a futures bet on the NHL going to the Olympics. What say you? Do you think it happens?
You know, I was unsure, and then yesterday I had a call with a source that was super optimistic, and they basically were like, look, the NHL is not going to tell you this, but the insurance issue, we had gotten that figured out. COVID insurance was a really big hurdle we need to clear, but we found a provider to provide COVID insurance. One of the last things we need to figure out is a drop deadline where, let's say a new variant arises and that is going to, you know, maybe prevent us from wanting to send guys to China. When does the NHL need to let the IOC know? Is it November? Is it December? But once they figure out those last two things, it really feels like they're crossing T's and dotting I's. And at this point, I think I would be shocked if players do not go. And honestly, that's just me selfishly speaking, because I love players in the Olympics. It's so important to them. I want them to be able to go, and it'll be a great game if they do.
So ESPN, back in the NHL swing of things. How excited are you? What are your expectations? Is your role going to change? Tell us about ESPN and the NHL going forward.
Dude, I'm so pumped.
You must be. Like,
yeah, no, this is awesome. And, like, I'm also pumped for guys, because I've been in all of these locker rooms at hotels and sports centers playing all the time, and they were just frustrated. Like, why aren't our highlights being shown? Why aren't people talking about us? We're going to have a studio show that's once a week that I think is going to be really cool, magazine-style, in-depth feature and storytelling. For me, I'm hopeful to be part of the game broadcast in some way, hoping to tell more in-depth stories. But I'm just so pumped just to see it in our ecosystem. Like, yes, it's going to be on SportsCenter, but you're also going to start seeing Stephen A. Smith giving his takes. He already had one on Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Pronounced both of their names correctly, by the way, which I was quite impressed by. And just other of our shows, just being in the ecosystem of ESPN, it's good, because ESPN is synonymous with sports in the U.S. It's on airports, bars, restaurants, gyms, all the time. And just having hockey visible is so great for the sport.
Oh, no doubt about that. And of course, you know, the NHL schedule being released yesterday, we know opening night will feature a doubleheader, Pittsburgh and Tampa and Seattle visiting the Vegas Golden Knights. What did you make of the schedule as a whole? Of course, we talked about the Olympic pause, and there's a couple renditions, our understanding of the schedule, and also the fact that there were no baseball-style series in the schedule this time around.
Yeah, I was really disappointed by that, because it's something that I liked last year, and I hope that we adopted from last year. And I know players really liked it too, because it was kinder to them on travel. And frankly, it's better for the environment, less plane trips, right? Like, come on, people, we should be thinking about these things. But basically, the NHL said, with all 82 games and all teams having to play 31 home and home, we just couldn't make the numbers work. And I understand that. And then I also heard that the NHL pulled its clubs and said, do you guys want the series-style scheduling? And there just wasn't overwhelming support for them to want it. So I was a little disappointed by that. But at the same time, I'm just excited for some normalcy and just seeing these matchups happen and seeing everyone get to play everyone and Connor McDavid play everyone in the league, which Austin Matthews play everyone in the league. I'm talking to a Toronto audience. I should probably say that. and I'm excited for it.
So in your reporting over the past, leading up to this draft and expansion draft, has there been any major surprises, any players or teams where you thought would do more or less, or some players that may be available that you never would have suspected before this summer?
Yeah, you know, the Tarasenko situation is interesting to me. Like, I remember my first really big feature story when I came to ESPN 4 years ago was going to Vlad Tarasenko's house. And he was just so proud to share with me of how he had become a son of St. Louis. And he really felt like that was his second home. He built a house. He was raising his kids there. And just hearing how that relationship had deteriorated. And I do really believe it began when he wasn't named captain. He was a little offended by that, kind of alienated himself from some teammates. And then, of course, there's a situation of the team potentially not handling his shoulder injury in the way that he thought was appropriate. So just watching that situation become untenable was really fascinating to me. So that's honestly the one this summer that has really surprised me.
Yeah, we'll see what happens over the next little while. A little perplexing, at least to me, why Seattle didn't take Tarasenko, but certainly a story that's not going to be told anymore, of course, with Seattle announcing their roster. Emily, excellent stuff, and have a great time in Columbus tonight, okay?
My pleasure, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy the draft.
You as well.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you. That's Emily Kaplan of ESPN. Of course, ESPN will have the coverage in the States and here in Canada on Sportsnet. Round one of the NHL draft coming up at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight. Tarasenko is so intriguing. We talked about this throughout this week. Like, you and I are pretty high on this player. I understand the shoulder issues are nothing to sneeze at. Like, that's pretty serious. But I just feel like Tarasenko, it seems like he's been around forever. He's just 29. Like, I still think like he has a lot to give, and whoever can get this guy is going to be happy with the rewards, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's he's a curious one. He's one of the examples with Seattle where I just don't understand why you don't take him right away. I see that he would come with his no trade clause. Like, he definitely would have to stay with you, and I understand that he makes a lot of money, but like, you know, you need someone to score goals. You need someone to be exciting. Like, there's a lot to like with the defense on this team. I just can't believe they didn't take him. It sounds like Emily mentioned maybe flipping Vince Dunn, which wild. But yeah, I would have taken Tarasenko for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to temper how I feel about what Seattle has done. And it's more so, Justin, because of Vegas and how I jumped to conclusions and said this team's dog crap. And well, the rest was history. But there was a lot of curious selections. And then on top of that, there were no protection deals. I obviously teams learned a bit, but I think it came to a point where it's like, why didn't they just make some deals to get some draft picks and, some assets in play for potential trades down the road. So I just think sometimes you look at players and you're like, how can you not select them? And how could there not be deals for said player on the table or potential value for said player? Like, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to come in brand new franchise and have Vladimir Tarasenko on your top line. Am I crazy?
No, I'm with you. You know, so like they talked about valuing cap space, and that's fine. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. You can weaponize that in a way when teams are desperate and come to trade deadlines. I really understand, you know, what they're thinking there. But you know, by doing that, it seems to me you're making the claim that you're not going to win immediately, correct? Like, you're not trying to win in that first year or two. So then why aren't you taking Shane Gostisbehere and taking all the picks and assets that come with him? You know, why aren't you agreeing to not take Jake Allen, which is what Montreal was originally going to do, for a pick and a prospect instead of asking for too much? You know, and with the Tarasenko thing, it just feels like, you know, you need someone to play in the interim to make your team win and be desirable for future years, too. So a lot of the things they did didn't make perfect sense to me, and I'm hoping that they will make sense as we see what they do in UFA. But, yeah, there's a couple of moves that I think they could have done better to add assets early on.
Yeah, just a bit of a head scratcher. Like, you know, we don't know what's happening or what has happened behind the scenes. Like, why didn't you lower your standards as to, you know, what you wanted in a potential protection deal? Like, you're telling me there wasn't one team to like, come on, let's just make the deal, and Seattle held firm on what they were looking for. I think at that point, I think you make some deals just to stockpile some assets, no?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It was very conservative the way that they went about things. So what strikes me as likely to have happened is Ron Francis didn't want to do what Brian Burke has talked about on this show, which is, you know, you set a price, and then if you later come down on it at the 11th hour, people think they can wait you out. They don't take your first offer ever. They're always coming back to you. But by digging in, you say, here's my offer, take it or leave it, and people believe you. Well, Ron Francis obviously did that with a lot of GMs, but I would love to see him do that down the road. You know, like the first time when it becomes apparent you set the standard too high and you're dealing with 30 GMs at once, you gotta swallow your pride a bit and bring it down to reasonable and get something. I feel like they dropped the ball.
Well, yeah, like that was a puzzling thing to me. It's like you didn't make one protection deal, not one single protection deal. And the only guy they flipped so far is Tyler Pitlick, getting a fourth round pick in 2022. You know, so, and he goes to Calgary. So that was, you know, it was my expectation they'd make a couple, but to not make any was intriguing. And I, you know, you're right in that theory, but I think you're right. Like you have to swallow your pride and make a deal. But again, we're not privy to the information behind the scenes. And certainly I just think it's way too early to make an assessment on the Seattle team. And again, a lot of it's because of what happened in Vegas. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for now.
It helps that they're in like a softer division there in the Pacific. You know, I think that D-Core is immediately, you know, outside of Vegas, maybe the next best D-Core in the division. Mm-hmm. You know, if Drieger ends up well or playing well or Vanacek does, then just a matter of can you score goals. You know, they're maybe not, and they have so much cap space, you think they can fill that too. So, yeah, I think they end up finding a way into the playoffs here. They haven't, like, written themselves off. It just felt to me like they missed an opportunity to utilize their leverage while they had it.
Yeah, I concur. Like, conservative, I thought that was the perfect word. And the two things that stuck out from their inaugural draft, they want size in their back end. How can you go wrong with that? You look at Tampa, you look at teams like St. Louis, you look at the Montreal Canadiens, and I think this team's going to have some serious jam. At the very least, they're going to be hard to play against. And with that, we'll hit the break. Other side, we'll have a couple minutes to break down the NHL draft. Again, round one coming up tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern time. It's Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne here on Hockey Central Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, back to wrap here on Hockey Central. Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy at JT Bourne. So we look ahead to round one of the NHL draft tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Sportsnet. We'll have to wait one more year to get a 32-team selection in the first round. That's because Arizona's pick has been forfeited. It was number 11. But the Buffalo Sabres, here we go again, Bourne, on the clock. Do you expect Owen Power to go first overall?
I do, yeah. You know, it's always tough for me to talk about the draft because, I mean, I generally watch the NHL and don't have time to watch juniors. This past season was a complete write-off, like a lot of people, digging in on Sammy Cosentino's work and doing my best to figure out who's what. But Power obviously has become the consensus number one overall pick, and it's wild that somewhere after about the number fourth pick, everyone just kind of throws their hands up and goes, I don't know, who do you like?
Yeah, you're right. Like, cheers to everybody out there for their draft rankings and their expertise and their knowledge and all the video work and just watching. Because you're totally right in covering this league. Like, it's you can't fake this part, right? To suggest that we know about these prospects is not fair. Again, we know enough about Owen Power. Maybe Matty Beniers goes to Seattle, but certainly there's a lot of heavy lifting and work done behind the scenes. And you made a good point earlier on. It's my expectation, at least, I think we see some deals tonight, more so because teams have no clue what these prospects are. So if there's a year to throw around first-round picks, it could be this one, Justin.
Yeah, I certainly think so. You know, just given the kind of the randomness of it, I like your odds of the guy you like falling later on. Not to mention a second, a third-round pick. A lot of these guys could have been first-rounders if they just had the chance to play. So I value the mid-round picks more than I would in previous years, but a first-rounder, to me, it's just so uncertain. God, by the time we get to the first round, you know, guys have like 29 or 31 picks dialed in or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's a different year this time around.
Bit of a crapshoot this time around. Lastly, in a couple seconds, Elliot Friedman saying yesterday that Ryan Suter, the sweepstakes are down to Boston, Colorado, Dallas, Florida, and the Islanders. Who makes sense in your opinion?
The Islanders will probably end up doing their thing. You know, just Lou Lamoriello gets Suter and Parisi there. They have a ton of cap space now. I think the Islanders are a sneaky big player this offseason. I don't know about Jack Eichel, but I see some other names as Landeskog, a guy. I just think they're going to do something.
Yeah, and I think the Islanders comprehend, and nobody ever knows what Lou Lamoriello is thinking. They just comprehend that, hey, we're really, really close, and they've come close against Tampa 2 years in a row. I think that's what they're missing, and we'll see. For me, I think I'd go with Boston. I think they've been looking for that Torrey Krug replacement. I know Suter's a bit longer in the tooth, but I still think he has a lot to give, and it would slot Matt Grizzlick a bit down in the order, which makes a lot more sense. But nonetheless, it's the best time of year. Borny, have a great time tonight, and have a great weekend, and we'll reconvene on Monday, okay?
You too. Thanks, buddy.
There you have it. There is Justin Bourne, the NHL draft, once again at 8 p.m. Eastern time tonight on Sportsnet here in Canada, ESPN down in the States. Speaking of ESPN, many thanks to today's guest, Emily Kaplan, for hopping on. Many thanks to Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy. And again, for Justin Bourne, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk on Monday. Enjoy it.